In a world of conflicting values, when questions are more common than answers, God's Word provides everything we need to live a God-centered, truth-driven life. Now, here's the Word for Life broadcast, brought to you by Brookside Baptist Church.
Well, good morning. Happy Monday morning. We're starting a new week for the Lord. And my name is Mark Whitmer. I'm joining Pastor Ken Keltner as we're walking through the book of Judges. And we've been talking and continue to talk about the judge named Jephthah, who is a very unlikely hero. And our tagline for this set of lessons is that God's power is put on display when unlikely believers are used to make eternal impacts in the lives of people for God's glory. We are very blessed as we look to many things in life. Here at Brookside, we've got a couple of big events coming up in the next 6-7 weeks, where the middle of September, the 15th and 16th, is our annual men's retreat, a Friday night and a Saturday here at the church. Going to be a great blessing. The 40th anniversary of the ministry is going to be celebrated on Sunday, October 1st, and 2 weeks later is going to be our annual missions conference, where we have 5 missionary families coming in. Some of them we support, and a couple of them would be new missionaries for us. And any of these that you are able or inclined to come and enjoy with us, please do. Pastor Ken, take us from where we have been to Jephthah, probably as it mainly relates to this vow that he made to God.
Yeah, and there, this one thing that even scholars want to argue about and present their views, so we're going to get into that. But early on here, though, in verses 30 and 31 of chapter 11, he is being manipulative in his pledge to the Lord. He says, if you will indeed deliver the people of Ammon into my hands, then it will be that whatever comes out of the doors of my house to meet me, when I return in peace from the people of Ammon, shall surely be the Lord's, and I will offer it up as a burnt offering. But if you notice, it's a conditional promise. If. That word "if" always seems to strike a chord of condition or doubt. Like Barak and Gideon, Jephthah's use of "if" prior to the battle testifies he's not real sure about the certainty of the outcome. And like with Gideon, God had already told him, I'm going to give you the victory over the Amalekites. But, I mean, he just kept going back to that fleece.
Yeah.
Jephthah, my friends, he did not need to bargain with the Lord, for he was the champion of a just cause. He had, in verses 12 to 28, he basically had very well communicated, no, this is our land God gave us. And then in verse 29, he was even energized by the Spirit of God. But the vow of Jephthah has caused much concern for Bible scholars throughout the ages. Two major areas of discussion. Did Jephthah's vow actually intend to be a human sacrifice? And two, in that number one, did he actually take his daughter's life? Or number two, did he commit her to a life of virginity, not ever knowing a man? Let's deal with the first one now. We'll conclude with the second question a little later. Some would attempt to prove by the choice of words used in the vow that he did not intend a human sacrifice, but an animal sacrifice. And so the word under examination then is that word whatever. Does he mean whatever or whoever comes out? That's the question. The shock that Jephthah had when he saw who came out of the house first seems to imply that he was anticipating an animal, thus an animal sacrifice. So, in using the masculine gender, whoever or whatever, rather than the feminine gender, which would have specified that his wife, assuming she is alive, his daughter, possibly a servant girl, or even better, his mother-in-law, would be the object of the sacrifice if the feminine gender was used there. Most interpreters who adopt the view that Jephthah's daughter was killed do so on the basis of the grammar of his original intention, to make a burnt offering with his vow in this verse. There's no doubt that Jephthah's vow was rash, a burnt offering. However, I would suggest that the meaning of Jephthah's vow was to give God whatever emerged. Again, that masculine singular, it just seems to be referring that he's believing an animal. They would have animals in their homes. So from the Hebrew usage, it doesn't seem to me to appear that he was thinking human, but animal. Sheep or cattle, things usually offered as burnt offerings, seem to be what was intended for sacrifice. Now, I mean, for us, it seems odd for sheep or cattle to come out of one's house, but a typical four-room house of this period contained a room that housed animals. There was a 300-year-old farmhouse in Spain that has been turned into a camp now, and in that home, there was a room designated for the animals. So in light of what God's done for us in the death and the resurrection of his son, the path of spiritual growth for followers of Jesus should really take us beyond the place where we pledge devotion to God on the condition that he come through for us on our terms. A while back, Mike McGivern was interviewed on Channel 58, and Mike Strelo was questioning him concerning sports and faith. And the issue was brought up concerning the loss of the Packers to the Seahawks in the NFC Championship game. This was years ago. And his question was, so where, Mike, was God in all of this? If you remember, that was Russell Wilson going up against Aaron Rodgers. And Russell Wilson commented after the game, God set everything up to make it so dramatic, so rewarding, so special. Wilson then added, I've been down through a lot in my life and have had some ups and downs. It's what led me to this day. Aaron Rodgers, on the other hand, did not really agree with the statement, said, God's more interested in people than he is in a football game. I would say that's the one time I really agree with Aaron Rodgers. I know people who will pray, God, if you allow my team to win, I'll start being more faithful to church, more committed to you.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, the making of a condition-based vow becomes not worship, it becomes manipulation. An effort really kind of to try to control the future instead of trusting God and allowing him to lead. And I would ask and strongly encourage you never to try to manipulate God to do something for you with the promise then that you'll do something in return for him. In verses 32 to 33, though, we see that the Ammonites were indoctrinated with Israel's God. They were whipped upside up one side and down the other. So why don't you read verses 32 and 33 for us, Pastor Mark, and see Jephthah's great victory here.
So Jephthah advanced toward the people of Ammon to fight against them, and the Lord delivered them into his hands. And he defeated them from Aroer as far as Minnith, 20 cities, and to Abel-Karamim, with a very great slaughter. Thus the people of Ammon were subdued before the children of Israel.
I think, Pastor Mark, we would be happy to have a few wild, chilling scenes from those battles.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they'll be videotaped for us in heaven, I don't know. But the writer compresses all of that to the barest of facts. It was quick. It was a whipping of the Ammonites. It was divinely directed. The Lord delivered Israel. The Lord defeated the enemy. Friends, I don't know what battle you may be facing as you're coming into this new week, but can I share with you 1 John 4:4? God is greater than he who's in the world. So look to him. Trust him. This battle was decisive. Cities were taken. Ammonites, don't miss this phrase, they were subdued. That's what he said in verse 33. The sons of Ammon were subdued from before the sons of Israel. That remark makes short literary work of the Ammonites, period. And so the writer of Judges makes short work of the facts of this battle with the Ammonites because he wants to focus on Jephthah's vow and what comes of it. It's as if the writer wants to swallow up victory in sorrow, almost as if he's disposed of the Ammonites because he's preoccupied with what Jephthah's vow will bring. You would expect to read that, and the land had rest for 20 years. Instead, we read not of rest or of triumph. We read of tragedy. Jephthah's virtue, and virtue's a good thing, and we start seeing it in verse 34. Mm-hmm. Why don't you read verse 34? This is the verse that people really want to haggle over here.
Mm-hmm. So she said to him, "My father, if you have given your word to the Lord, do to me according what has gone out of your mouth, because the Lord has avenged you of your enemies, the people of Ammon."
He returns here from Mizpah in triumph. I mean, it should have been the most joyous day of his life. What a great victory God's given. But he recoils at his home reception. He is greeted first by his daughter. She dances and she plays a tambourine in celebration of her father's victory. The text tells us that she is his only child, meaning that if he loses her, he loses any future generations personally. And Jephthah tore his clothes and he told her of his vow that he could not change. I mean, you can almost, in between the lines here, just see his shock and his remorse. Problematically, it was very troubling for him. It was troubling that she came out to meet him. Yet many times women would come out to celebrate a victory. And here he goes back to his vow. My question would be, have you ever made a vow? Let me give you just a quick sermonette on vows. If you make a vow in the name of God or in the name of Jehovah, don't go back on it. To reverse your vow to God is like taking his name in vain. There is an important vow that is made between a man and a woman in the presence of God and many witnesses. Don't go back on that. Because we call that marriage. It's a marriage vow. It's a serious oath to God, and God tells us he hates divorce. Men, if you're listening, when you married your wife, you made a vow that you would love that woman.
Mm-hmm.
And ladies, you also made a vow in the name of God to submit and respect that man. In churches over the years, I've seen men punt on their vows. And gentlemen, maybe your honor is not that great to you. Maybe you're not afraid of God like you ought to be. But you need to take serious thought about the integrity of your word and what you covenant to do before God. When you give your word, give it and mean it. In other words, let your yes be yes. If your mate leaves you or your mate commits adultery or physically beats you, then that's a whole nother sermon for another day. And if that's happened, let one of your pastors or spiritual leaders help you. I mean, if you're in serious physical trial, you call the police. But Jephthah makes his vow, and he knows he cannot break it. And so when we meet for our next broadcast, I'll give you really what I believe is another thought. This is the one that scholars debate back and forth concerning what Jephthah's vow meant and what he did. And again, great men on both sides of it. I'll give you my thought in the next broadcast. Thank you for joining us as we continue our study here in the book of Judges, Hearts of Stone and Feet of Clay.
We hope you enjoyed today's program. If you have a question we can answer or would like information on the Word for Life, would like to donate to continue to produce this broadcast, or need resources for your Christian walk, contact us at Brookside Baptist Church, 4470 North Pilgrim Road, Brookfield, Wisconsin, 53005. You can also visit us at brooksidebc.org. That's brooksidebc.org. Or call us at 262-783-6180. That's 262-783-6180. Thanks for listening today, and please tune in again as we bring the Word of God to your life.